All right, then, welcome everybody. Great to see you. And today is our tax roundtable for August of 2019. And hopefully, you can download the handout. I made a quick PDF copy of today's PowerPoint. If you don't get it today, what we'll do is you'll be able to find it after the session, about half hour, an hour after the session. I will post it into the board and I will post it to the Tax Mama site. It might not say 2018, but you'll find the tax roundtable over there. Hopefully everybody has a microphone because the purpose of these tax roundtables is not for me to talk. It's for you to ask your questions or bring up any issues you want. And those of you who've been here before know the routine. We start out by having each person introduce yourself, tell us who you are, where you are, and why you're here. And the fourth thing I want to know is if you're going to have a question that you want us to talk about once we take care of the questions that people have already submitted. So, let me start. My name is Eva Rosenberg. I am the Tax Mama, and I am here to learn from all of you. I don't have any questions. In fact, I'm totally overwhelmed with my own work right now, but the information that many of you ask about and that many of you respond to really helps me quite a lot, believe it or not. So let's start with Bernice. I'm going to unmute you, and she already knows how this works. Hi, Bernice. Have you found your microphone?
Hello, can you hear me?
Hey, there you
Yeah,
go.
can you hear
Yes,
me?
we can.
Oh, okay. I thought I had to have my headset on, and for some reason it's not working. That's very strange. It's always been fine. It's just me forgetting to push that microphone button at the top of the screen usually. Okay, and I have to leave for a doctor's appointment pretty soon, darn it. So I finally joined the log. You guys,
Oh.
I don't. I have too many questions to bring up. I should have sent them to you in the mail, and I am just here to listen and see how this works and hopefully learn something because I've
Okay,
got too many clients in trouble right now.
who are you and where are
Oh,
you?
I'm sorry. I'm Bernice Brightbill. I'm studying in Eva's EA class, and I have part two to finish to become an EA, and I have a whole hell of a lot more to learn. Okay.
And she's in Southern California here, almost a neighbor by
Yeah,
Southern California
Pasadena.
standards.
Yeah, Pasadena, California. And just looking forward to hearing the rest of you.
Thank you very much.
Thanks.
And by the way, she is going to be heading to the San Diego IRS Tax Forum coming up. If anybody is going to be there, get in touch with her. She's going to be there, and one of our breakfast roundtable folks here in the Valley, Jurate, who is an attorney. I think she's an attorney, isn't she, Lulu? She's a CPA. Yeah, she's a CPA, but her practice is in high-level international taxation. And so she's going to be going there also. So I'm hoping to put the two of them together. If anyone else is going, let us know. And Bernice, you can post the questions into the board. Okay, Anne, hi. She's got to find her microphone button. And if you're not going to be able to use your microphone, folks, please let me know. Just click on the little man up on top and use that little drop-down arrow and mark yourself away. And that way I won't be calling on you, but you can type your intro. So, Anne, I'm not hearing you.
Okay. Hello.
There we
Hello.
are. Oh, that's better. Hi.
Okay. Hi. Yep. Ann McIntyre, San Antonio, Texas, former IRS, EA, and CPA. and no questions.
Just answers, right? We turn to you for advice. Okay, thanks, Anne. Great to see you here. Guys, Anne has been with me for a long, long time. Super, super terrific lady. Alfred, how about you? Find your microphone. If you don't want to do that, let me know and you can just type your intro. Otherwise, we'll come back to you later, okay? E whoops, Elizabeth. Hang on. There we go. Elizabeth, hi.
Hi, can everyone hear me?
Oh, yes, good morning.
Hello?
Hi.
Hello, can everyone hear me?
We can.
Hi, I'm Elizabeth. I am studying for part one of my SAT exam to become an EA. I don't have any questions yet, but I'm here for my first roundtable.
Excellent, excellent. Welcome. Some of these things are set up so that if you have your microphone on, you can't hear us. So hopefully you can hear me now. If you click on the audio link up on top of the screen, look at the audio settings. There is an audio conference setting, and when you open up the bottom part of it, you'll see there's a box on there that if it's checked, you can't hear us if your microphone's open. If it's not checked, you can. Just a thought. Okay, Jamie. Hi, Jamie.
Hear me?
Hey, Jamie, we've got you. Ah, there you are. Hi.
Hi, I'm Jamie. I'm an EA from North Georgia. I'm taking the CFP exam in November. And my goal is to get more into planning, tax planning.
And we have your questions, so we're going to cover those. So I'm going to unmute you when we get into your questions so that you can respond, okay?
Okay, thank you.
Great, thank you very much. And Karen, hi.
Yes, good morning, Eva. Hi. Hi. I'm Karen. I'm from Central Mass. I am studying for the EA exam right now. I don't have any questions today. Want to learn from everyone. If there is time at the end, I went to a taxes and retirement little seminar thing
Either you
last
turned off
night,
your
and it was just
microphone.
something that
You
they
want to
were
turn it
talking
back
about
on?
I had
Okay.
never heard of before.
I'm sorry,
So
you want to start
if
that
there's
again?
time, I'd like to just ask,
Hang
please.
on. Karen, can you, Karen,
Hi.
can you please start that again? Your microphone went off and we didn't hear you.
Yes.
Not the intro part. You said you went
Oh,
somewhere.
okay. Yeah, I went to a taxes and
Can
retirement
you please
seminar
start that
last
again?
night, and they just brought up something I had never heard of. I went to a taxes and retirement seminar last night, and if there's a couple of minutes left, I'd just like to ask you about indexed universal life insurance, but it's nothing that important for today, so.
Okay. All right. Good. Ask me about something I don't know about, but we may be able to look it
Yeah.
up. Indexed universal life. Made a note. Okay.
Indexed
Great. All
universal
right. Anne may know something
life.
about that.
Yep. All right.
Okay. Got it. We'll see.
And I
Okay.
have a
Great.
section.
Thank you all. Whoops. Hang on. And you have a what?
I have a section for the IRS code.
Okay.
For that as well, 7702. Because you're
Okay. All
always
right.
telling us to get the IRS section. So, thank
Yes.
you.
Absolutely. All right. Great. Thank you. Hang on, let me. Yeah, one of my favorite pet peeves whenever I read information that writers, journalists, and so forth, whenever they write anything about tax laws or tax information or theoretically give tax advice, is that they don't include the specific citation or the name of the tax law or the tax law number that the House bill or the Senate bill or something. So you can actually look up what they're talking about. Maybe they get it right, maybe they don't, but if you can go to the source and you have a code section or the name of the bill and you can actually look it up and find out what's going on, you can do more research and understand what they're really talking about. And everything that I write, every book, every article, everything, every class, either has links to it or it has it in my notes and I can pass it on to anyone. But I try to make that information as transparent as possible so that people can look it up themselves. And if I'm wrong, heaven forbid, but it could happen, they can let me know. And that's the same thing that we did with the Apator tax software. Incidentally, it's not just Apator. What we did, for those of you who haven't really heard the news, what we've done is we have taken Lamber's database of questions and Apator's, and we spent the first half of this year combining the two databases, updating all of the answers, and in every single answer, speaking of citations, we have one or more links, sometimes even five, to the specific sources, forums, or anything. So that's what has been totally eating up our time this year, is updating that into an amazing resource. As of this moment, the Apator database is updated, but it doesn't include about 1,000 questions from Lamber's. We're still working to get that in. The Lamber's database, on the other hand, is updated, but they charge a heck of a lot more. They've always had their prices set up just in case anybody is interested. Debbie, you're here. You have one shot to do your intro before we get into all of your questions. And you can download the handout over there in that little box on the bottom left. Let me unmute you. Hi, Debbie. Okay, her headset is missing. It seems to be missing. All right. Okay, we have a lot of material to cover because Jamie and Debbie had questions. So I'm going to go straight into it and we will see how far we get and how much time we have for new information. So Jamie basically asks two questions. One, is there a good resource that discusses audit liability proofing the tax practice? And two, the Certified Tax Coach program cost is out of my range, which I understand it's not cheap. What is another good resource to optimize tax planning in my practice? She's sitting for the CFP exam, Certified Financial Planner exam, in November, and tax will most likely be my main service offering. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to start going through my answers to you, Jamie, and after I finish the answer to each of these separate questions, I will unmute you, and then we can talk about it, okay? So, first of all, about a good resource that discusses audit liability proofing the tax practice. You can certainly get errors and omissions insurance, and you can certainly get malpractice insurance to cover all of those things. You can also get business liability insurance, and you can get an umbrella policy to cover whatever shortfall there is in the business liability insurance and whatever you need to cover any other assets that you have. You could, of course, put your tax practice into some kind of an entity, but here is the problem with all of these liability protection entities. They don't protect you because your tax practice is about the services you are providing. So if they're going to sue your tax practice as a corporation or a limited liability entity or whatever, they're also going to sue you personally. So don't be misled by anybody who says that those liability protection anything will help you. There is another way to protect your personal assets, and that is to put everything into a trust. And you may need to do some work with somebody to find out what kind of a trust you can put things into that will protect the assets, still give your heirs a step up in basis if you happen to die, which will happen sooner or later, hopefully not sooner. And you'll still be able to theoretically transfer the tax effect of all of those assets into your personal tax return. So the one part of that that I'm not sure of is the step up in basis part, is which kind of an estate planning program would let you do that. Now, as far as audit proofing your clients, there's only one way to really audit proof your clients and the work that you do. And fundamentally, to pay attention to what I've taught you about the due diligence, doing your homework, and document. Tax Mama's mantra: document, document, document. If you document everything that you do and you never accept any material from a client, any number from a client verbally, they always give it to you in writing so that you have proof that they came up with the number and not you, that's going to be a huge protection for you. The other thing is screen your clients. So, new people may come to you because you're advertising, they may come through referrals, whatever. If something doesn't feel right about a person, whatever reason it is, if your instincts say, I'm not sure I can work with this person, not sure we can get along, not sure I'm comfortable with the way they behave, sound, smell, whatever it is, because all of your senses come into play, including smell. And sometimes there are pheromones or something coming off a person that are bad news and they're warnings. We are still animals. Trust your instincts. Especially if somebody starts out the relationship by being disrespectful to you or anybody on your staff, or wants to start negotiating your fee, if they don't think that you're worth what your fees are, why start the relationship at all? Why waste time? Work with people who treat you with respect in the first place, and it will only go up from there. People who start out nitpicking fees, want to have an argument about everything, they're just going to be horrible, horrible clients in the long run. The other thing is, anytime you take a position on the tax return, so routine things, you've got W-2s, 1099s, no problem. If you have to establish a basis for something, if you have to make a decision whether something is deductible or not, do the research. Be very thorough in the research. Print out whatever it is you found, cite code sections, revenue procedures, or whatever it is, if you have to do some research and you're not absolutely clear. If something needs an explanation, make sure you use Form 8275, the disclosure statement. Include the information, make sure it's attached to the return. And if there are complicated issues, things that might bring the value, the tax rate or the tax liability down by 25% or more, or raise asset values by 25% or more than the IRS thinks they should be, make sure you provide enough detail in the disclosure statement. Because then, if it is ever audited, the IRS, if you've provided adequate disclosure, can only audit for the normal 3 years. If you don't provide it, and the tax effect is 25% or more, IRS can actually audit for 6 years. So no disclosure can be expensive. So if there's an issue or something going on, somebody has some kind of complicated situation that you don't understand, these are some of the options that I recommend. If you can't research it yourself, consult a colleague for advice, and I I strongly, the first chapter of Small Business Taxes Made Easy is not just for general businesses, it's for you as well. It talks about building an advisory group around you. And it's a good idea to have that advisory group, whether it's local, whether it's people you've met online that you trust, not people. And there are some people in like the Facebook internet community that always have an opinion and they're always hostile and trying to shove it down your throat. Those are not the people that you want on your advisory team. People who keep getting kicked out of forums are not the people that you want. And you know who some of them are periodically. If you're trying to do something you've never done before, bring in a consultant. You're going to pass the fee on to your clients. I have an engagement letter template in the board that has information spelled out that you will bring in consultants as necessary, and you don't need to consult the client unless they have to pay for the consultant, in which case you're going to do that, or refer the client out. Somebody was asking questions on Facebook somewhere about a situation that they're not really ready to deal with. And everyone was telling her, well, refer to me, refer it out, or whatever. My best recommendation is rather than refer it out, bring in an expert, work with the expert. Don't just turn the case over to the expert. Only work with somebody who will include you in everything so that you can learn. So when I was first starting to do estate returns, I worked with the family's estate attorney or my friend, Melvin Krieger, who is like the top estate attorney in the country probably. And I had them look over everything I did before I released it. As a result, everything I did managed to pass inspection by the IRS. And the last thing I'm going to tell you is don't ever let your client talk you into doing something you're not comfortable with. Even if they're willing to sign a hold harmless letter, that all that means is they won't have the right to sue you. That doesn't mean the IRS doesn't have the right to disbar you, or if you're a CPA, that the AICPA or your state CPA society doesn't have the right to disbar you. So if you're not comfortable, and I've had that over the years, even from people that I have been very close to, I've kicked them the heck out. Life is too short to put up with people who don't understand that this is your livelihood, that if you do some stupid thing because they want to save a couple grand, you may never be able to make a living again. So this is the best advice I can give you about audit proofing and liability proofing your practice. But let me unmute you so that if you have other things you want to talk about, we can add that in. And Debbie, thank you. She says, so glad I learned that from you long ago. Your gut says send them away. Send them the heck away. Jamie. Got you unmuted. Anything you want to say or ask about what you've been talking about? We know your headset worked before. Okay, if you get it back on, we'll come back to you. Let me know when you've got it working, okay?
Can you hear me
oh,
now?
There you are. We can.
That answered my question. The only thing I wanted to clarify, like I have a lot of business clients who want to just give me a P&L. I mean, do I need to actually see all the receipts that add up all the numbers on those P&L items?
No, you don't. You don't have to audit your client's information. They can't afford to pay you enough to audit the information. But if you're not doing the work, right, go back to our class on Accounting 101, where I walk you through the different kinds of expenses that you really need to look at. There are some things you need to look at. You need to have not just the P&L, you need to have at least the last bank account, all of the payroll tax returns, all of the sales tax returns, and if there are any other government reports that they're filing, like with the city here in Los Angeles, we file a city tax return for the city of LA. Anything else that they are filing with any government agency, you need to see that. You need to make sure their information matches what they've told government agencies.
Right.
And you charge accordingly. It's not a quick and easy process when you're working with a business. So you're not doing those returns for peanuts.
Okay, thank you.
And if you find clients who constantly have errors in their business books, then you need to talk to them about either turning the accounting over to you or having you review it at least every quarter, or get to know a really good bookkeeper in the area that they can work with, whom you can rely on, not somebody who's just a bookkeeper and does an equally bad job and charges big fees. So you
Okay.
need to screen them, okay?
Thank you.
Sure. And business clients are among the most lucrative clients that you can work with. There are a lot of interesting things that you can do with business clients. So let's go to our next question. Speaking of business clients, her next question is, the CTC program cost is out of my range. That's the certified tax coach. What is another good resource to optimize tax planning in my practice? And I wish that in your question you had mentioned that you were focusing on business clients, because that would have added some material to what I can give you. She's sitting for the Certified Financial Planning exam in November, and her main offering will most likely be tax. Well, first of all, the CFP is pretty darn good training, and it's nice to have the certification. But as far as I know, unless something has changed, most of that relates to dealing with investments, with growth of assets. Just type in a note, Jamie. Does it really have anything to do with tax reduction strategies rather than asset growth strategies? I don't know that it does. Just curious. And I know that sometimes you might need certain securities licenses also if you're going to be a CFP. No strategies. Okay, yeah. So no strategies, just rules. Yeah, so that's not really going to help you with taxes. It might help you guide your clients towards financial investments. Before I actually came across Dominique's Certified Tax Coach program, there was something by Ed Lyons called the Tax Coach System at taxcoachsystem.com, and it was affordable, and it was only, I don't know, monthly fee of about $100. And you could log into their system, try it free for about 30 days, use their software to do a tax plan for a client. It would print out some really nifty reports for you, and it would be pretty helpful. It's changed into something. He got a partner, and now it's called the taxmasternetwork.com. So if you put in this URL, you're going to end up over here. And they don't list their prices. Any place that does not list prices tells me that they are very expensive. If they're not honest enough to tell you upfront what they charge, I'm not really sure exactly. They have a few videos you can look at, and I'm okay with videos, but I can watch something or read something much more quickly. I can scan it in minutes rather than have to sit through a half hour video. So I know their prices are probably higher. I don't know what it is their offerings are, so I can't recommend that. There is something by Andrew Argue, who is a CPA. And I don't really know what exactly it is his program is. I've seen it online. I've heard from a couple of people some disparaging comments, but there are always people who will do that. I suspect he is a well-meaning man, but I don't really know what his program is. And again, it's not cheap. So here are some options for you. You can go to CCH. CPE link, and I did a search for the keyword tax planning on that system, and I came up with 515 results, so you need to narrow it down a little bit. Part of tax planning is also focusing on a particular area. So it, just tax planning in general is way too broad. So you need to save yourself time and focus on some specific area of tax planning that you want to work in. That way you can learn everything about that much more quickly than the broad information. One of the things that you can do is you can call the folks at CPE Link, and they have a couple of all-you-can-eat packages where you pay a flat fee and you can take any of their classes. And that's what I would recommend if you want to use CCH, because they've got great material, not just mine, they've got some really good people in there. And CCH is one of the oldest tax publishers ever. I mean, since the very beginning of time. And CPE Link isn't, but since CCH bought them, or Wolters Kluwer bought CCH and bought CPE Link, they have been adding their own CCH writers and their own CCH material into the program, and it's amazing. So there's a lot of really good stuff. So call them, tell them what you want, and even if you're going to get the all-you-can-eat package, have them design a course of study for you. And if you've never used them before and you tell them Tax Mama sent you, you will get a 10% discount on your order. But the thing is, when it comes to real in-depth tax planning, you're not going to get those things from any courses. Courses are courses. They're going to give you ideas, they're going to give you checklists, they might even give you links, but they're not going to give you the software and the tools that somebody like a Dominique does. She gives you stuff you just work with, you can produce a package for your client, you can hand it to them and get paid a lot of money, a lot of money. So you still, if you're taking those courses, you still have to find software that will run numbers for you, that will present the information to your clients, that will let you play with different strategies. Sometimes what you can do is use your existing tax return software. What I do is I save the client file and I rename it with another, with I'm testing for, let's say, selling property. So I will rename the file with their name and, the strategy I'm looking for, and I'll be able to test a whole bunch of different ideas in it in the software directly without messing up my original client file. So I can still use that for next tax season without having it messed up. And the tax return software probably has a tax planning tool in there. You can click on something and it'll let you have three or four different columns. Those are okay, but they don't necessarily let you put in all of the different content and strategies and things that you can really do if you just use the whole software itself. So that's one of the things you can do if you don't want to buy software. There is some software that you can get, and it's called Tax Tools. It's 200 bucks, but if you tell them I sent you, it's literally 50% off. And it's got a whole bunch of tools. Some of them will help you do projections. Some of them will help you do some kinds of tax planning. We'll print out different amortization schedules and other different things. There are, I don't know, like about 50 different things you can do with the software. But there's nothing if you don't actually go through and explore the software. Give yourself a couple of hours, and if you can't figure out how to do something and you see that they have some of the tools for that, call them. I emailed them when I had some questions and it took a couple of hours to get back to me. If I'd called them, we would have had the conversation immediately. But when they did call me, when they did get back to me, we must have spent 2 hours on the phone testing out what I was doing with them was testing out their Section 199A software. And so we were able to work through different scenarios and they showed me how to use it. So the other thing about the tax tools, and really 100 bucks, it will print out the reports that you've produced with your firm's name on it, so it looks really cool. So it looks like you are a bigger firm than you are. So you can certainly customize that. So that is a pretty useful tool. Then there is something called Spidell Publishing based here in California. And since time immemorial, probably literally for 40 years, I've been going to Bob Spidell's seminars when he started them when they were only about California tax. It has grown since Lynn Freer bought it about 20 years ago. And now they have some really excellent courses on estate planning, and that is a very good area of practice. And they have a number of different courses, either live or recorded self-study webinars. And their books, their material that they give you, and they'll give it to you in a PDF form if you're using it online, literally are my best references year-round. Talk about citations, talk about court cases and things like that. They provide excellent detail, and the back of the books or PDF file has an appendix with all kinds of templates that you can use. But you know, they're PDF files. You have to convert them to Word or something, or you may be able to ask them for Word files. Anything that you study with them, if the laws change and there are updates, they will send you the updates. Hugely reliable, hugely accurate. They are about the most reliable people providing education that I know. Oh, however, online we have a new business that started about a year or so ago. We have the Compass Tax Educators. I forgot about that. We have the Compass Tax Educators that have courses generally taught by Kevin Houston or Houston, you know, the guy in the wizard outfit, and Tom Gorczynski, and kind of overseen by Cheryl Gregory. Anyway, she's the one who teaches the tax court exam. And so she has taken some of her graduates who have passed the tax court exam and they teach for her. They have really neat stuff. I don't know so much about tax planning, but take a look at what their offerings are because they are really reliable. Those guys are very careful about what they're doing, and they're pretty darn good teachers too. So those are perhaps three options as far as general courses. And yeah, Bernice is going to Spidell's classes. Oh, my California. Oh, me. Oh, okay. Yeah, I'm teaching two California tax update classes for CCH, I think at the end of this month or next month. But those aren't really tax planning classes. Those are just general update information about California and comparison. So that's okay. So just going through course by course, you're going to learn a lot of things. You're not going to get the tools that you need to really do high-level tax planning. Nobody is giving that away in a $50, $100 course. I clue you. That's why you can go through that stuff, get started, get some grounding in some of these things. But if you actually want to make money quickly, a program like Dominique's, and I don't get a commission, guys, it's just, you know, I learned so much when I was there, and I've sent some of my graduates to her course, and the feedback I'm getting is, and I just heard from somebody at one of the breakfast meetings last month, her son AJ went to the course last year, I think last September, and he came back and they had a client and he immediately used some of the information he learned from Dominique to use a tax strategy for his client. And I don't remember what it was Saroj said, but he used a strategy. And she only works with very legal, safe strategies, not a lot of the BS I see out there. And she explains them because I never want to use a strategy that I can't understand. If I don't understand it, I'm sure it's going to be one of those dirty dozen things. It's going to turn out to be that. He immediately put a client into some program that and took advantage of some strategy, saved the client over $100,000 instantly. You know, and she recommends that when you're saving somebody money like that, you can get paid a contingent fee. You can instantly get at least 10%, if not 20%, of what you save them. This is not tax preparation. This is tax planning, where you are allowed to charge a contingent fee, or you do a projection and say, okay, I am going to save you this much. This is what I want you to pay me to do this fee. The other interesting thing about her program is if you can't implement the fee, the recommendation, you don't have to. She's got people who will do it for you. The fee, the 10 or 20% is for the plan, not for the implementation. The implementation is a whole other fee for going through that. So nobody that I know out there is actually doing a full-blown, really good tax reduction strategy kind of program that they're giving away for a few hundred bucks. They know the value of the programs that they have, and since they are generating, you know, tens of thousands of dollars, million, half a million dollars for the people who actually follow their guidance, they're not just giving it away. It's going to cost. It's going to be an investment. You don't need to do it now, but sooner or later, you are going to want to make that investment. And the first time you use what you learn, you're going to get the money back. So don't do it now. Go through some of these other courses to get some grounding. But check back with them periodically. There's going to come a day when you want a program like that that is reliable, ethical, and has support behind it so that you can do the tax planning that you want. And you can contact them. They have ongoing support all the time. So it's well worth it. So Jamie, let me unmute you and see if you have any other questions or comments. Or criticisms.
Yes, those resources sound great. I will check those out. I appreciate it.
Okay, great. Thanks. All right. We're probably going to run past 9 o'clock because Debbie has a whole bunch of questions. So let's look at Debbie's questions. This is the overview, and then we'll go through them one by one. I think we've got 6 questions. And she doesn't have a microphone, so she'll type her notes or comments. So she's been doing research for a client who lives abroad and has some questions. She thinks she has the right answer on some, but wants confirmation. So lady is a U.S. citizen and has lived in Belgium for 3 years with her spouse, who is a Belgian citizen. When they lived in the U.S., they filed jointly, but he turned in his green card when they moved to Belgium. So Anne, I'm hoping that you may be able to help out a little bit here. So first of all, let me just suggest that some of these questions, the first two questions you ask, that you post them not in the board, but in the Tax Mama forum, because Jean Mammon, who literally wrote the book on non-resident aliens, visas, and all of that stuff, she answers those questions, and she really knows her stuff about those filing status issues and things like that much better than I do. So just letting you know that you may want to ask these first two questions, okay? All right, so let's look at the first question. I think since he does not have a green card or an ITIN, they must file separately. Am I correct? Not positive, because I'm not really sure about how he gave up the green card. You know, there is a certain process, and until you actually go through that process and completely disavow the American connection, he might still actually be a green card holder in effect and may still be responsible for U.S. taxes. I don't know. Okay, I don't know. But most likely, she will need to file separately, and she will report her worldwide income. I'm not positive if her filing status is going to be single or married filing separately when you are working with a non-resident alien spouse, but you didn't mention until later that there is a child who is 16 years old, so she might get away with filing for head of household, okay? You asked if they can file jointly. Since he probably still has his Social Security number because he paid into it while he was here, they might be able to file jointly, and they have a Social Security number, and they would have to include all of his worldwide income in addition to hers. So Debbie says she did not provide over half the cost of the home. Husband makes more than she does, and they put all the money together to pay the bills. So she doesn't have to provide more than half the cost of the home. She has to provide more than half the cost of support for her son. and you use the support worksheet to see if she provides more than half the cost of his support and more than half the cost of his home. So he lives in effectively one third of the home. So work through those two head of household worksheets and support worksheets to see if that would fit for head of household. Otherwise, it's going to be married filing separately. Next question. She has the son from the previous marriage who lives with her. The boy's dad has nothing to do with them, no support or custody. I know she would claim him as a dependent, but if the current spouse earns more and they file separately, would he claim the boy since he has more income, though he is not the biological father? I think it doesn't matter since you can't use the earned income credit when you're married filing separately anyway. Well, true, she can't use the earned income credit, but even if they filed jointly, she wouldn't be able to use it because her income all by itself is almost too much, and combined with her husband's, they wouldn't qualify anyway. So she's married to the non-resident alien. As I said, it's possible she can use the head of household filing status, but you need to run the numbers. I don't understand the question, though, really, about her husband claiming, her current husband claiming the child. He's not filing U.S. tax returns, so who cares what he does in Belgium? It makes no difference. So whatever he does in Belgium is his business, but you mentioned that the boy's father has nothing to do with him. That doesn't mean he's not a malicious SOB and that he doesn't try to claim him on his tax return if he thinks his wife isn't filing. So make sure that he isn't going to be claiming him and that your client never gives a release of the support and the exemption of the dependency to her ex. So at least she may be able to claim him one way or the other. Three, she's on a bank account in Belgium that has a balance over $10,000, Debbie says. So it is my understanding she needs to do FBAR income reporting. Since she didn't know this, I think her best option is to do a streamlined offshore procedure. I haven't done one before, but I would like to learn. Any suggestions would be appreciated. And that is excellent. First of all, she does have to file. No matter what, she needs to file a tax return every single year. She doesn't get things like the foreign earned income exclusion or anything else if she does not file. So we had our breakfast meeting about a week or two ago, and somebody was just talking about the streamlined offshore procedure. And he said that if you use that, it will cut through a lot of the penalties because she doesn't live in the country. She will definitely have to file the FBAR for all of the open years. So whatever years she's been living there and the bank account reached $10,000 or more, she is going to have to catch up on the FBAR carefully. If you want to, I don't know if you have joined the Tax Court LinkedIn group, but do join that Tax Court LinkedIn group, and you can bring specific questions into that group. There are some experts there that deal with this stuff on an everyday basis. If you want one of them, perhaps, like Virginia, I think she is in Dubai or something, to look over what you're doing as a training exercise, I'm sure she doesn't have low fees, but you're going to learn a lot. So there are some people in there who really, really get it. Before filing those FBARs going back, make sure that she reports every dime of interest income or dividend income from any of those bank accounts. Over and over again, I am seeing people getting blown out of any of these special programs because they didn't report the income. In fact, yesterday we were doing a CPE Link class on innocent spouse and reading through the judge's decision. The woman in this particular case, her name was Rita something, and she couldn't qualify for the first two levels of innocent spousehood because she didn't report $16 of interest income. Her own income, she didn't report $16, so she didn't qualify. There was another provision, 605, 6015F, that she did qualify for, but not reporting these tiny little bits almost blew one of my clients out when they had that amnesty program. So we had to do a workaround it. So make sure all of the earnings that she has from anything, especially foreign, are picked up. Otherwise, $16 can make her liable for $10,000 penalties a year. Next question, can I explain the difference between FBAR and FATCA, and does she need to do both? I don't know, but she might. So first of all, the FBAR is with FinCEN, is with the Treasury's basically their, it's essentially their criminal investigation division. And filing the FBAR with the US Treasury is an online form. You file it directly with the Treasury, and you only file it if she has control over total aggregate accounts from all sources of $10,000 or more. So you've already told me she has that and she needs to file that. The original deadline is April 15th, but they are automatically extending it to October 15th since the last couple of years. I think since the PATH Act, they don't actually have an extension form, but my contention is that if you filed an extension on the 1040, that will suffice. I'm not trusting that they will automatically give you an October 15th extension on the FBAR if you didn't also file an extension on the personal return. Not positive, they haven't really defined it. Okay, as far as the FATCA, that is a form that you file with the 1040. So it's form 8938, so it's due along with the 1040. And if she has assets, she's going to be married filing separately. If she has total assets with more than $200,000 on the last day of the tax year, or that reached $300,000 at any day of the year, she is going to have to include the FATCA form with her tax return. So you have the links over here, and there's a comparison of these two forms side by side so you can see what each one involves. This is a really great site. Question number five. Her son, age 16, is a US citizen. He was injured and had personal damage and won a medical malpractice lawsuit case. Is he permanently disabled or is he functional? The money is invested in the US in a trust. The investment account is set up in care of his mom. Is this a disability trust, like an ABLE trust? He receives a little over $4,000 in dividend and $9,000 in capital gains from exchanges made within the account, and she wants to claim his income on her taxes. Since it is over $10,500, I think he has to file his own tax return, and since it is unearned income, it cannot be excluded. Does the fact that it's in a trust have any bearing on this issue? Well, generally, it's going to depend on the kind of trust. Most trusts are designed to pass the income through to the beneficiary. You can opt to report the income on the trust level, but you really don't want to because you hit 37% tax rate when the income reaches $10,500, and in this case, it's already 35% at $9,150. So we don't like to pay taxes on the trust level. Now, mom can go ahead and use the form 8814 and report the interest and the dividend and capital gains income. She'll pay taxes at her tax rate. So I don't advise it because mom's tax rate is probably going to be 25% or above. However, if the boy reports it on his own income tax return, here's what's going to happen. He's still going to get a deduction for his own personal standard deduction, and that's going to reduce some of that income. But look what you told me. He's got probably qualified dividends and capital gains, and if that's his only income and it's somewhere around $10,000, he is likely going to have a 0% tax rate on those capital gains. So my recommendation, I could be wrong, and this isn't an international thing, and you may be able to pipe in over here. I would report this on the son personally. And then the other question is, she makes under $40,000 a year and has one W-2 for her income based on all this information, including needing to do the 2555, the foreign earned income exclusion. Her son's return for 2017 and 2018, plus the streamlined offshore procedure. Any recommendations for a fair fee? If you've been prowling some of those Facebook forums where people ask about fees, you know that it's not really ethical to recommend fees, collude on fees, or anything else. Okay? Let me see what Anne says. She says it sounds good. Also, if any of those funds were used, be sure. Oh, if the that's right. If the boy took any of those dividends or capital gains, be sure that they didn't end up providing more than half of his income. Otherwise, he may not be qualified for head of household or dependent. Excellent. I knew that. That's great. Okay, all the funds are left in the account. Perfect. So we're back to those computations. So let's look at what we're talking about here. Chickie has W-2 income, and so she's going to qualify in full for the foreign earned income exclusion. And she doesn't have any self-employment tax she has to report because she's on a W-2. So none of that money is going to be taxed. The whole income is going to be tax-free as long as you file the tax return. She doesn't file the tax return, then it's not going to be tax-free. So that is a condition. She has to report all the interest on the bank accounts and any other income from any other assets that she shares with her husband. And since she is reporting, if she's signing on any other investments or anything else that passes income, she's going to need to pick up the whole thing because, from the IRS's perspective, even if they own it jointly, if she's owning it, she's responsible for the US taxes on all of it. Okay? So, again, let me reiterate about the streamlined procedure. It can backfire if you don't do that. As to the fees, I want you to think about this. You have to do research, and you're probably still going to do some more research. And you have to do look at how many different forms you have for each year. None of this is a basic, simple tax return. It's higher level tax information. And you can do this based on your hourly rate and charge for the time. Although I probably don't recommend this because this is probably worth a lot of money. So think about how much you're saving her in penalties and all kinds of other problems. You're going to get her out of paying tax altogether, her and her son most likely. So charge accordingly. You know, whatever you think is reasonable that you feel based on the level of expertise you have. And Debbie, you've got decades of expertise. You are now an EA. You know a lot. You're ethical. You're going to be able to take care of them in the long run. Charge what it's really worth to you. Rarely do I want to charge anyone by the time, because the time is just the time it might take to do the tax return. Let me tell you a story about this guy. There's this guy I knew in high school, hated me, absolutely hated me. I don't know what I did, but he hated me. Anyway, we ended up getting thrown together when he was a tenant in an office building that I was working in, and we were the only ones working there late at night. So we started, you know, hanging out together, not dating or anything, heaven forbid, but we started hanging out. And I was in his office one day and he gets this phone call. He was an engineer. He gets this phone call from a client and the client is asking for some complicated computations and he wants it right away. He wants it as soon as possible. So the guy tells him, okay, fine, I'll be able to get it for you in a week. The guy says, no, I really need it as soon as possible. Okay. So Louis says, all right, I'll tell you what, I'll get it for you in about 3 days. The guy had to be satisfied with that. So Louis gets off the phone, writes some notes on a piece of paper, and sticks it in his drawer. He says, well, that's done. I'm not going to give it to him for another 3 days because I don't want him to know how easy that was. And I'm going to be charging him $10,000 because it's not for the time I spent. It's like the surgeon walking into the operating room and making one cut and walking out and charging a fortune. It's for knowing where to cut. Same kind of concept, Debbie. You charge what this is worth, not how long it took you to do or how long it took you to research. Especially when you're doing new things, the research may take a long time. When you're doing things you're already familiar with, you know exactly where to look. So use your judgment, okay? But I can't tell you exactly what fee to charge. So that's it. That's all I've got, Debbie. Do you have any comments, questions, suggestions? And then we will look to see if there's anything in Karen's question that I might be able to find something about. She asked about indexed universal life, and we are looking at what? Section 7702. It's a life insurance contract. Well, it's just 7702 is about any life insurance contract. It's not about anything specific. So let's look at indexed universal life. And let me just see if there's anything that the IRS has to say about IRS.gov, indexed universal life. Okay. The IRS has 11 pages of a private letter ruling, it appears, on indexed universal life or something like that. Oh, Debbie, my goodness, you're very, very welcome. You are very welcome. You're an amazing person. Okay, so Karen, we have 11 pages over here that you can read, and they have asked for application of 7702 with respect to the rider benefits taxpayers intend to offer. You may want to read this, so you may want to see what this has to say, and you may also want to see, hang on. Oh, they've been writing about this since 1999. Ooh, here is something from 1999 about indexed universal life specifically. You know what? Just do this search. Just do this search for on Google. Search for those words, and you're going to find a lot of information. And also check to see if it is one of those trusts that the IRS is saying is one of their illegal trusts. Because every time I see something that is just too good to be true and it comes in the form of insurance, there may be something really great about it, and that's okay. And it may be something hokey. But let me see if I can understand this. It may have something to do with, and someone explained something like this to me about 10 years ago. It's a life insurance policy, and you have a specific benefit if the value of the underlying assets goes up at the end of each year. It locks in that higher value as far as the cash value, and it does that, like every year or every period for the policy, and it may actually be legitimate. It may actually be kosher, but find the details. Also, look for, IRS Index Universal Life and problems. Whoops, I can't. If you start, I keep telling Lulu, if you start typing with the wrong key, everything comes out wrong. It comes out as gibberish. So see what you can find when you look for that search. I always look for that for search with problems or complaints, and things show up. And is there anything in the audit guides? IRS audit guide, hang on. IRS.gov audit guides. Let me see if there's anything in there about insurance. The audit technique guides. I, inland. Hang on. Insurance. They have foreign insurance. They have split dollar life insurance. Okay, this might be something like the split dollar life insurance. So here is the audit guide. That's kind of what it sounds like to me. Oops. Here's the audit guide on that. And hang on, let me close that and audit techniques. Yeah. So look at the split dollar life insurance. I remember there being something like that. They published this one in 2005, and that might give you some ideas. So that's all I've got. Does anyone else have anything that you want to bring up? Great, thank you. If anyone happens to be in the San Fernando Valley here on Monday, Lulu and I are going to be at the CSCA San Fernando Valley chapter dinner meeting Monday night, and we have a really, really fun ethics session set up called What Would You Do? I've put together about 16 different scenarios, and it's an open discussion with the attendees about, here's a situation, how would you handle it? And then we have the reference to the code section in Circular 230 or someplace that might reference it, but I have no answers. It's all a matter of opinion. Anyone else have anything else that you want to bring up? If you do not, then I'm going to go ahead and close this down. And thanks for getting me the questions. I love having the information up front so that I can put something together so that you have a takeaway, so you have something to use. So I'll see some of you at class tonight. It's all about how to make a living as an EA. And other than that, I will talk to you guys later. And Anne, thank you so much for the feedback. Really appreciate your help. You keep us honest.